offering my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, I welcome you to this week's episode of the Gita series, A Triune Pilgrimage, a journey that we do together. And as I've said many times before, yes, this is an exposition on the Gita, but it is not an expertly one, because as I've mentioned, I too am a person who is reading this for the first time, and I've requested the joy of all of your company in this journey, and I'm very grateful to all of you for joining me, and grateful to Swami, of course, for giving us all this opportunity. In this series, we take up the Bhagavad Gita verse by verse. We do not leave out any verse. I give you the meaning for that, and then we discuss about what that verse is all about. We've just completed the first chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. The first chapter is called the Arjuna Vishada Yoga, which is the despondency of Arjuna being expressed to Lord Krishna. And Krishna patiently listens to that, and we begin the second chapter today. The second chapter is called Sankhya Yoga, or the Yoga of Knowledge. It's an important chapter, and the reason why it is important, apart from the fact that it speaks of the highest wisdom, is this is the chapter where Arjuna literally accepts Krishna as his guru, and Krishna accepts Arjuna as his disciple, and the true discourse of Krishna begins in this chapter. And that's why this is the most important chapter in that sense, from the point of view of this conversation between the Lord and his devotee. We'll probably start with a short summary of what we covered in the last episode. It was the final lap of the second chapter. Arjuna continued his argument, and he explains in the course of that how women are the final frontier when it comes to the protection of dharma. And of course, Arjuna participating in the war will not be harming the women directly, or in fact he wouldn't be harming even dharma directly, but he says that if he were to participate in the war, he would create an atmosphere of chaos, and in that chaos there will be what he refers to as intermingling of castes and intermingling of kulas. And the children born of such an atmosphere will not be in a position to honor tradition and dharmic practices. And they will not perform the obsequies that they have to do for their ancestors, is another point that he makes. So the one who causes such confusion of in a large scale, it is not just confusion in one family, it is not a depression or a sad event in one family. This is in the entire subcontinent. All of the kingdoms have assembled here, either the main kings or the princes or representatives from all kingdoms have assembled in this battle. And so he says that participating in a war such as this is going to create mammoth chaos and confusion in society. And he says the one who causes such confusion, and the ones who are born of such confusion, and the ancestors of all these people, all will suffer. And that's the big argument that Arjuna is placing in front of Krishna. And thinking of all of this, Arjuna is wondering, how did we get to this place? How did we even think that we could come and participate in a war like this and fight and kill these people who are my own people and cause all of this confusion? Where did our sense of propriety and dharma go? That's what Arjuna is asking. He's saying that, why didn't we think of all of this before, and you know, why didn't it occur to me before? That's what he says in that penultimate verse. And finally, he puts down his Gandiva and the arrows, the bows and arrows, he puts them down and he slumps into his chair. And that is the scene which finally in the last verse Sanjaya describes to Dhritarashtra. And Swami writes so beautifully that at that moment Dhritarashtra was so joyous, that gave him a sense of hope, that he thought that what has happened, that Arjuna is withdrawing from the battle, that means a huge advantage for the Kauravas. It could even mean victory for them. But Swami says that, you know, that is the sad plight of a person who is misguided. Because as we went through last week, some of the arguments which Arjuna gives are so profound. Yes, they are coming out of delusion, as we will see. Yes, Krishna does not approve of them, But nevertheless, they are very, very beautiful arguments, and they are a beautiful portrait of how dharma can be established and protected in a society. And if any person who has a little bit of sensible understanding or goodness in approach would listen to that and say that, wow, this is exactly how we need to go about living in society, how we have to go about protecting society. And this entire discourse is being heard by Dhritarashtra to Sanjaya, but nothing moves in him. At least now he can get up and say that, let's put an end to this war, because so beautifully this young member of my family, Arjuna, who is supposed to be like my son, he is giving this beautiful explanation of how this war is going to lead to a wholesale destruction of dharma. And he says that the one who causes such confusion will go to hell. And who is the cause for this entire thing? It is Dhritarashtra. Had he been a person of straightforwardness, had he been a person of genuine goodness, he would have reacted in that way. But on the other hand, he reacts with happiness. He's saying that, oh, is Arjuna going to withdraw from the battle? That seems to be a good news which is coming my way. But Sanjaya continues with his description. He says that, don't be hasty, O Lord. The conversation continues. And that's where the second chapter begins, where Sanjaya once again gives a very brief description of the plight of Arjuna. And then what does Krishna say? For the first time, Krishna is going to speak. Of course, Krishna speaks. One of the verses in the first chapter is where Krishna says that, O Arjuna, I have brought the chariot to the center of the battlefield as you asked. And see, here are the people who have come to fight against you. That's the only verse in the first chapter where Krishna speaks. But here Krishna is going to speak, and Krishna is going to direct. He's going to give his upadesha. It is going to begin in this chapter. But the first verse, as I said, the first verse of the second chapter is in the words of Sanjaya. Because let us keep in mind, the entire thing is as narrated or as related by Sanjaya to his king Dhritarashtra. So we'll listen to the first verse of the second chapter, and I'll give you the meaning and we'll talk about it. As always, it is being rendered by Brother Shyam, an alumnus of our university, a contributor to Radio Sai. He's been a part of our Vedam tutor on many, many occasions, and a very active member of the Sai organization. Very grateful to him for giving us this beautiful rendition of the Bhagavad Gita very, very clearly, so we can understand each word as he is chanting it for us. Over now to Brother Shyam. We'll listen to his rendition of the first verse of the second chapter, and I'll give you the meaning, and the discussion will continue after that.
Sanjaya uvacha tantatha kripaya vishtam ashrupurna kulekshanam vishidantamidam vakyam uvacha madhusudanah.
To him who was sad and thus overwhelmed by compassion, whose eyes were filled with tears and showed distress, Krishna spoke these words. So Sanjaya says that he gives, as I said, a brief description of what is Arjuna's plight. And for one full chapter, Krishna listens patiently. Krishna knows everything. Krishna knows exactly what is going on in Arjuna's mind, but he still listens. And if we were to talk about our abilities to listen, we don't know what the other person is going through when we are in a conversation with another person, but still we don't listen. How sad is that? So if Krishna knows everything, Krishna is the antaryami, he is the indweller of each one. He knows everything, he knows every thought that crosses through every person, he knows completely well what is going on in Arjuna's mind. But still Krishna listens for an entire chapter, allows Arjuna to pour out whatever is in his mind. So why is he listening to Arjuna in spite of knowing everything? Isn't it a sign that speaking out is actually helping Arjuna, and that is why Krishna is allowing him to pour out? This is a very important point that I think we all can keep in mind. Yes, we listen to know, but we must also listen to give an opportunity to the other person to express himself or herself. most often the other person's learning happens in the process of expression itself. And I'm sure that is the case with Arjuna too, in the process of explaining whatever he had to say. As we said, some of the arguments that he gave are very, very profound. It's not anything substandard or faulty in that sense. So he might himself would have come up with a lot of clarifications in the process of explaining that to Krishna. And that is why Krishna gives him that opportunity. And he says, you know, I'm giving you this opportunity to express, not because I want to know what is in your mind, because I want you to express. And I'm sure many are listening probably to the show like that. Not that you don't know what the Gita is about and you need to learn from me or you need to hear an explanation from me. But when you listen, I guess it gives me the opportunity to express maybe and in the process learn. And that's probably that's precisely the reason why I said I'm going to do this program. I consider this as Swadhyaya, my personal study, and I've requested all of you to join me in that, and I'm very, very grateful to you, as I said in the beginning. But let's come back to Krishna and Arjuna. As we saw in the last chapter, Arjuna gave some brilliant arguments. Just to list a few, he says, how can I kill these people? They're all my people. If I happen to win, the very people with whom I would have liked to share this joy and celebrate this victory, they all would have died. And then he says, the earthly kingdom seems too small a reward for which I can participate in this fight and kill all of these people. And then, of course, the many points which I mentioned in the summary when we started off, which were the verses we covered last time. So all of these are the arguments, brilliant arguments, foolproof arguments, so it appears, that Arjuna gives to Krishna. After giving all these arguments, Arjuna finally sinks to his seat, Kripaya Vishtam, overwhelmed by compassion. And then Sanjaya describes, Ashrupurna Akulekshanam. Depressed eyes were brimming with tears. That is the description he says. Akulekshanam means depressed eyes, and Ashrupurnam, filled with tears. This really speaks of Arjuna's nature. This was not a drama that he was doing, or this was not an ordinary kind of weakness really, or a fear that what will happen if I participate in this war and get killed. It is not that kind of a weakness. Arjuna by nature was a very, very sensitive person. Yes, he was a great warrior, he was brave, he was dynamic and all of that, but at the same time he was a very, very sensitive person. And that is one of the reasons why among the Pandavas, he is the one who is actually interested in fine arts, like music and dance. Even though he's a great warrior, even though he's a very manly and brave person, he still is interested in fine arts because internally he's a very, very sensitive person, very soft-natured person. So he genuinely breaks down. That's why Sanjaya says that his eyes are depressed and it's brimming with tears. You don't cry without reason. Unless you are truly overwhelmed, you will not be sinking to your chair with tears streaming from your eyes. But in spite of all this goodness and sincerity that Arjuna is expressing here, what he is doing is certainly wrong. Why is he philosophically wrong? Well, that is going to be the theme of the Gita. That is what Arjuna is going to learn from Krishna. And that is probably the main body of the Bhagavad Gita's philosophy itself. But Arjuna is wrong for another reason, a specific reason why Arjuna in this place is wrong. Who has been at the forefront of all the negotiations that have eventually led to the war? Who has agreed to be on their side and who has driven Arjuna in a chariot right to the center of the battlefield now? It is God himself. And will the Supreme Lord ever instruct one to do something which is adharmic, unrighteous or wrong? That is the fact that Arjuna is forgetting. In Prashantinilam, there used to be a very, very unique practice. I don't know if there's an equivalent of that in any other place. Swami students, some of them, after they finished their courses, there will always be some people who would want to serve Swami's institution, stay back, and as a matter of extending their stay with Swami or dedicating their lives to Swami's service, whichever way they look at it. And after they finished their courses, they would wait for Swami's instructions, either to work somewhere or Swami to come and say that, all right, you carry on and you work and stay in your hometown and work, whatever it is, whatever instruction that Swami would give. And they would wait for Swami to give that instructions, and that's why they used to be given the term the waiting boys, right? They would be waiting for Swami's instructions. So effectively, they would not have a job, there would be no earning, and because of that, they will not be supporting their family monetarily or even physically being there and supporting their family. So this period of waiting could go on for few weeks to few months to even few years, and sometimes it could be very, very long. Sometimes Swami will not give a job so easily, and that's why this period goes on for such a long time. But that does not mean that Swami will not permit these boys to stay. Sometimes Swami would even hint that he is actually happy with their sadhana and patience. In fact, Swami would call these waiting boys for innumerable interviews, and whenever Swami has some important work, Swami would call them. Recently, we were remembering late Bharatatna Atal Bihari Vajpayee. And when he had come here, when he was the Prime Minister, he was staying in what we call the Srinivasa Guest House, which is there on the way to General Hospital. And when he had come and he had stayed, I think, for a couple of days, that time Swami had called all of these waiting boys who had finished their courses and waiting for Swami's instructions. Swami had given them the duty of taking care of the serving of the Prime Minister. So sometimes Swami would do this, and in many ways, if not even telling directly, Swami would give them indication that he is happy with them being around, right? So at such times, some of the elders would raise this question every now and then, that aren't these students failing in their duties towards their parents? The parents have educated them, the parents have given them this good education and opportunity. Isn't it their due to now go back and serve their parents? Isn't it adharma in that sense? And the students themselves would, you know, feel this way, that, you know, is this adharma? Because Swami is very, very particular about doing one's duty, being dharmic. So is this adharma in any way? And there was this one teacher who was telling that, how can you even think of this as adharma? Swami has permitted you to stay. Will Swami ever permit anybody to do any adharma of any kind? You have told Swami that, Swami, whatever you tell us, we will do. Can Swami permit you to do adharma in his name? And that's precisely Arjuna's predicament here. He has gone to Arjuna, he has gone to Krishna, and Krishna has come on his behalf to the battlefield. Krishna has negotiated on the behalf of the Pandavas. Krishna has come back and said that, we have tried out everything, probably this is the only option left. Arjuna is forgetting that it is Krishna who is in a sense approved of all of this. He is in the forefront of all of this. Can Krishna, can the Lord himself permit a bad action to be done in that sense? So Arjuna seems to have forgotten it completely. Who is the person who is riding his chariot? Who is he next to? And maybe as readers, maybe as people who are reading this entire chapter, maybe even we could get carried away by, you know, Arjuna's Kripaya Vishtam. The overwhelmed, Arjuna being overwhelmed by compassion might even overwhelm us. We might also forget that, yeah, man, I mean, Arjuna seems to be very, very right. He seems to be telling the right things. And this is not right. This seems to be adharma, and so noble of Arjuna. Even we might forget that this is the mistake Arjuna is doing. Yes, the predicament that Arjuna is in, we might also be in many, many situations, right? We might also be in similar situations where we are not able to clearly see what is right and wrong, or we have discriminated what is right, and when we are about to do what is right, we might think that, is this really right? Have I really taken the right decision? So in that sense, we might be in similar predicaments. And the essence of the Bhagavad Gita is meant to understand those situations, right? But if in any situation, if there is a direct instruction from Swami through an inner direction, or let's say Swami has told you in a dream and you're absolutely certain that this is Swami's instruction, I think there should be no dilemma at all. Because once it is a direction, it is a command from the Lord, there should be no discrimination after that. All discrimination is only in the absence of that direct communication from Swami, right? And that is the mistake Arjuna is making. So we as readers might also forget this mistake that Arjuna is making, because his arguments are so brilliant, right? He is not an ordinary person, as I mentioned last time. He is a person who is so well-versed in dharma. He understands how dharma works and how dharma is protected and how dharma is passed on. from generation to generation. He seems to be very well versed in that. And we might also get carried away. So Vyasa, the author of the Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita, probably chooses to remind us. And that's why the next verse starts with Bhagavan Uvacha. To remind us that it is Bhagavan who is next to him. It is not any ordinary charioteer, an ordinary king, or an ordinary prince. It is the Lord, and Lord will never direct you or lead you onto the wrong path. And that's what Vyasa reminds us. He starts the next verse with Bhagavan Uvacha. And he will be using this throughout the Bhagavad Gita many, many times. Wherever Krishna speaks, it says Bhagavan Uvacha, so that we don't forget that these are the words of Bhagavan himself. And that is why this is Bhagavad Gita. It is not a name which is given without a meaning, right? These are all the instructions of the Lord himself. And that's how the second verse of the second chapter begins, and Krishna begins to speak. And what does he speak? Let's listen to that, the second verse, and I'll give you the meaning after that.
Shri Bhagavanuvacha Kutastva Kashmalamidam Vishame Samupasthitam Anarya Jushtamasvargyam Akirtikaram Arjuna.
Shri Bhagavan said, in such crisis, from where has this impure despair come upon you, Arjuna? It is not at all becoming of an upright man and does not add to your good name, nor is it which leads one to heaven. And finally Krishna speaks, and when he does, he shows absolutely no sympathy to Arjuna. He doesn't say, "Are you papam, Arjuna? How sad, you're feeling so sorry, you're crying." He doesn't pat his back. "Why are you crying? Is there anything?" But he scorns him. He kind of rebukes him. He says, "Kutastva kashmalam midam." That's what he asks. "From where has this dirt come in you?" The word kashmalam means impurity or dirt, or it also means faint-heartedness or pusillanimity. He says, "Where has this kashmalam come from you?" Right? Whichever way you interpret or translate this word, kashmalam, it means weak-heartedness. At the same time, it also means some form of dirt or impurity in thinking. So Krishna asks, "Kutastva kashmalam idam?" From where has this impure idea, impure perception, or faint-heartedness, weak-heartedness come in you? And he is calling it, he does not give it any respectability. Whatever Arjuna has been telling all this while, it seemed to be a wonderful discourse in dharma and a monologue of a person who is so deeply noble. But Krishna does not approve of it. He shows no sympathy. He does not give this understanding that he has expressed through these verses any kind of respect. And he goes on to say, Vishame Samupasthitam. And it has come in this hour of crisis. You know, whatever Arjuna has been thinking is probably not wrong or bad in that sense. But everything has a time and space. And Swami would say, you know, there's a place, time, and circumstance for everything. And this does not seem to be that. And at this moment of crisis, when you're in the middle of the battlefield, the battle is about to begin, everybody is about to pounce on you and kill you. And at this moment, it is not the right moment for being overwhelmed by compassion. And that's what he says, Vishame Samupasthitam, not at this time. Kutastva Kashmalam Idam Vishame Samupasthitam. He says, from where has this impurity come in this hour of crisis? This is not the time for that. You know, Swami had once said in a discourse, people say that compassion is always good, but I say even compassion can be bad. These are Swami's words. And Swami went on to explain, misplaced compassion is always bad. See, a mother should be very patient and compassionate and loving, right? But at the time when, let's say, a mother is disciplining a child, there should be no place for compassion there. Or let us say that when a teacher is invigilating an exam and the student who is writing the exam is a student who he or she has himself or herself taught. And let's say the student is struggling with an answer in the course of that exam and she sees that the student is struggling. At that moment, the teacher cannot come and become compassionate and say, "Are you a papam? The student is struggling. Come, let me help him or let me help her." There is no place for compassion in that place. That's what Krishna is saying. This is not the time for such self-introspection. That hour has passed. This is not the time. This is the time of crisis. This is the time of action. This is the time for strategizing and taking part in the battle. This is not the time for Kripaya Vishtam to be overwhelmed by compassion. That's what Krishna tells Arjuna. And he says that, you know, the hour has passed when it is making its, you know, when at this time it is making its appearance, this is an appropriate time, inappropriate time. Krishna says, I will not call this kind of rumination as paraya kripaya, as Sanjaya puts it. He says, it's supreme compassion of Arjuna, right? That's the phrase that Sanjaya used to describe it. He says, paraya kripaya. But Krishna says that I'm not going to call this paraya kripaya. I'm going to call this kashmalam. He says, this is filth, this is dirt, this is faint-heartedness, this is impure thinking, this is pusillanimity. He says, I do not agree with this. And Krishna is also upset that Arjuna did not raise all these points before. Right? He said, he could have asked me any of this at the time when we were deliberating about the war, and you know, Krishna was always with the Pandavas. He said, this is not the time to raise all these questions. You could have asked me all this before, not after bringing me to the battlefield like this. In Swami's Gita Vahini, Swami writes, Krishna tells Arjuna, you woke me up from the sleep and you drag me to the battlefield and then you ask all these questions. That's how Swami writes it. You know, we know that. That's how Duryodhana and Arjuna go to Krishna and take favors for the battle, right? So Swami says, you woke me up from my sleep and you drag me in a chariot. You make me drive the chariot. You make me take care of your horses. You make me do all of this for you. You bring me to the middle of the battlefield and now you start asking all these questions and now you talk about dharma. He says, this is not the time. This is not the time for such crisis. Let us say that, you know, I'll give you an example. Suppose we are buying some equipment in the studio, or for that matter, I think even in your workplace, you can think of that. There's always a few steps that need to be followed if you want to make some procurement. Like in studio, we always follow that, right? We first have to go and tell the administration or the management that we need this particular equipment, a mixer or a monitor or a speaker or whatever it is. We go and tell them that, look, we need this particular equipment, and then the management will tell us, all right, you get us a few quotes, then we'll decide. Then we'll go about making a few calls, sending a few emails to vendors, and then we get a few quotes, then we'll present it before the management, and then they'll say, okay, let's go with this particular quote. I think this happens everywhere, right? Then we go to the vendor, we give the specification, we procure the item, and let's say it comes to the point where we are supposed to pay the vendor. And at that time, I'm taking the bills and I go to the management. And let's say the management now asks, do we really need this equipment? Or, you know, I think we should have done a cost-benefit analysis. Or maybe we could have waited for a few months, the next version of the same equipment would have come. You know, what would be our reaction to that? We would say, boss, all these questions you should have asked me when I came with the proposal. Not now when I have already bought the equipment and I'm going to pay the vendor. This is not the time for these questions. The questions are not themselves wrong. Questioning is not wrong, but the timing of that questioning is wrong, right? Similarly, Krishna is telling Arjuna, this is not the time for you to wonder like this. He says, Krishna is telling Arjuna, boss, this is not the time. This is not the time that you need to ask me these questions, because you were prepared to fight. All these people have assembled here, right? Because you were prepared, I sent my battle. I mean, again, that conversation between Duryodhana, Krishna and Arjuna. He says, because of you, I sent my army. And Krishna says, I've come all the way from Dwarka. And you know, it's a long, long way away. Dwarka is in the western end of the subcontinent. He says, I've come all the way from Dwarka. And my Narayani Sena has come. Of course, they've not come to fight with me, but against the Pandavas. But nevertheless, they've come all the way. And all of these people have assembled here. You cannot speak like this now. And that's what Krishna says. And then Krishna uses three sharp adjectives to describe the actions of Arjuna. He says, this is anarya jushtam, asvargyam and akirtikaram. He uses three very, very strong words, anarya jushtam, asvargyam and akirtikaram. What does Anarya Jushtam means? Arya means a man who is cultured and who knows what is right and wrong, who behaves appropriately, who knows the right thing, who knows the right mannerisms. Probably in the modern parlance, we would call him a gentleman, right? And Arya is supposed to be a person who is cultured. A cultured man, a gentleman, is called an Arya. And Anarya is the opposite of that. The antonym of Arya is Anarya, one who is not cultured, one who is uncouth, one who does not know right and wrong, who does not know where to speak what. And the word Jushta means practices. So Anarya Jushta means practices that are of a person who is uncultured, right? So Krishna is calling Arjuna's behavior Anarya Jushta. He says this is not what a cultured, knowledgeable person would do, but this is that of an uncivilized, uncouth person. Don't think your approach is superior, noble and advanced. That's what Krishna is telling Arjuna. Don't think that you're very sophisticated in your thinking. This is Anarya Jushtam. This is actions of an uncouth person, uncultured person, a person who does not know what to do when. As I said, his timing of these questions are so bad, right? It is like asking, do we really need this when you're about to pay for the equipment that you've already bought, right? You've already come to the battlefield. You're doing the most inappropriate questioning at the most inappropriate time. And he says this is Anarya Jushta. This is not what a cultured, knowledgeable person would do, but this is that of an uncivilized person. And he says that, you know, I thought that you're supposed to be, you know, the other word, probably the Anarya Jushtam, the antonym for that is Arya Shrestha. Arya Shrestha means among gentlemen, he is the gentleman, if you could put it that way. Among all these cultured people, the most cultured, or the one to be looked up upon, or the one to be held up as an example. Krishna says, I thought you're an Arya Shrestha, but you are behaving like an Anarya. You are showing behavior that is Anarya Jushta. And Krishna is giving absolutely no respect whatsoever to the words of Arjuna. Arjuna thought that Krishna is going to give him a pat on his back, but Krishna is giving him a slap on his wrist, and he's saying that this is not right. This is Anarya Jushta. And then he calls Arjuna's behavior Aswargyam. It is not something that will give you a place in heaven. Swarga means heaven. Aswargyam, it is not something that will give you a place in heaven. Arjuna argued that one who causes such massive confusion in society would go to hell, right? That is one of the arguments that Arjuna was placing in front of Krishna. So discriminating and withdrawing from such actions is supposed to be a noble gesture, right? That's what he was saying, that if I do this, I'll land up in hell. So the corollary of that is, if I discriminate now, if I don't do this, if I run away from this place, if I give up fighting at this moment, then I will be suitable to be, you know, sent to heaven. That's the unspoken word of Arjuna. But Krishna is telling him, no, this is Aswargyam. Your actions are Aswargyam. They are actions which will not lead you to heaven. Don't even entertain the idea that this is noble, and as a reward for this, you will be given a place in heaven. He says, this is Anarya Jushtam. This is Aswargyam. And finally, Krishna describes it as Akirtikaram, that which will lead to infamy. He says it will not make you a very popular person among the other Kshatriyas or among the other people in Bharatvarsha. He says this, it is Akirtikaram. Do you think that people will celebrate this decision of yours? No, you will be laughed at. Why is Krishna saying this? Why is Krishna calling the choice that Arjuna is about to make as Akirtikaram? There are two ways of looking at, you know, Krishna's initial sharp words to Arjuna, especially in this verse. One, he's trying to hurt Arjuna's pride and wake him out of his misconceptions, right? Because Arjuna is a Kshatriya, he's a warrior. And for a Kshatriya, pride and reputation is the most important. It's more important than anything else. It's more important than even one's own life, right? And that is why Krishna is trying to tell him that this is going to lead to bad reputation. People are going to speak ill of you. And he's ridiculing Arjuna as calling that you're behaving like an Anarya, an uncultured person. Because clearly Krishna is trying to prick that Kshatriya pride of Arjuna so that he will wake up from this delusion that he's caught up in. But the deeper meaning of this particular adjective that Krishna uses, akirtikaram, it means that one is doing actions that are not worthy of being remembered, not worthy of being spoken about highly. Swami says this in, I think, the first chapter of Premavahini. It is there in the first chapter of Premavahini. Those who are following the Premavahini satsang will know this. In the very first chapter, Swami says this, that good character alone obtains lasting fame and is remembered. Right? The society remembers only those of good character, and Swami goes on to explain. He gives the examples of Vivekananda, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. In fact, in another discourse, Swami beautifully says that, the land of Bengal is supposed to be filled with intellectuals. Swami says there's so many scientists, there's so many musicians, and so many great scholars who came from there. But who are those who are remembered today? We remember Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, we remember Vivekananda, because they are men of character. Because a society finds worthy of remembering only those who are upholders of character, right? Swami says that. So in this Premavahini chapter, Swami says that only good character obtains lasting fame and is remembered. And then Swami quickly says, but you may wonder, is everyone who is popular in the society today people of good character? And Swami explains, see, the fashion and trends in a society constantly keep changing. But those values that are eternally celebrated will always remain the same. An eternal society, an eternal, which will celebrate and give eternal fame, will always be the same values. And we can see that even now. Even now, if we look around and see what is happening in society, you know, be it the corruption which we see, or you know, the latest, the Me Too movement, or the abuse of power. In a sense, we all know that it exists in society, right? It's not coming as a surprise to us. We all know that it exists in society. But when we see even people who are very, very famous are guilty of such acts, we look down upon them. It does not matter that they are people who have achieved so much. It does not matter that they are people who are, you know, who held a lot of respect in society. No. The moment we associate such people with acts which are unacceptable, immediately we look down upon them. It's because however the society's overall morality might fall, it still knows what is right and wrong. A society never forgets that, right? So even if famous people are associated with these acts which we know are wrong, immediately it leads to akirtikaram, infamy happens, right? So that's because the society always holds high the same eternal values. Honesty and straightforwardness, in that sense, they may not be rewarded monetarily, right? Being honest might not be the most lucrative option. It might not make you the richest person in society or even in your street. But that does not mean that people look down upon honesty or straightforwardness. Honesty and straightforwardness will always be celebrated. It may not be rewarded in that sense, but a society will always remember and regard honesty, straightforwardness, goodness, right? That's why Swami would say, if one were to get a good name in society, if one were to live in such a manner that he or she gets a good name in society, rather than merely earning money or earning respect or fear in that sense, not just respect, but people having fear of you. If you strive to earn all of these things, instead of that, if you strive to earn a good name in society, Swami says, automatically your life will be regulated and you will lead a dharmic life. So here Krishna is calling Arjuna's actions akirtikaram, which means it is fundamentally wrong. Yes, on one hand, he's trying to hurt that Kshatriya pride by saying that people will laugh at you. People will look at you and say, look at Arjuna, he's the one who has run away from the battlefield. And as one of the Pracharakas of the Gita, one who has explained the Gita, he was saying that imagine all of these people who have assembled for the battle in the Kaurava side will start having their own stories. And he says that who knows, tomorrow one of the soldiers might say that, you know, Arjuna ran away from the battlefield. Do you know why he got scared? Because he saw me. I was standing right in the front. Arjuna saw me and ran away. Any kind of stories can start off. So one hand, Arjuna is Krishna is trying to hurt the Kshatriya pride by saying that nobody is going to talk highly of you because of this decision that you made. It'll only lead to infamy. But the deeper thing that Arjuna is being told by Krishna is, this is akirtikaram because it is fundamentally wrong. That which will lead to kirti will be that which is eternally valued in society. And what you're doing is fundamentally wrong, and that's why it is akirtikaram. And why is it anarya jushtam, aswargyam and akirtikaram? Why is actions like this? We only know that Krishna is giving this description, but why is it? Why is Arjuna's understanding wrong? All the explanation which he gave, which seemed so splendid, why is it wrong? Well, that is what Krishna is going to explain in the chapters that are going to follow. But what is the flaw of Arjuna's approach is going to be explained in ways which are going to be very, very applicable to us. Because as we go through, we will see that these are the very same mistakes we do. But we are so well versed in doing mistakes that we don't even realize that they are mistakes. But when we see Krishna's explanation of why Arjuna's actions are that of an uncultured person, anarya jushtam, and why they are aswargyam, not leading to a place in heaven, and why they are akirtikaram, leading to infamy, we will realize that many of these mistakes we also do in our everyday life, and it's an opportunity for us to correct ourselves, right? But for now, it does appear that Krishna is hitting Arjuna where it hurts most, right? That's what it appears. And he's attacking his pride and self-respect. In fact, it is going to be attacked even more, as we are going to see in the next verse, which is the third verse of the second chapter. We'll listen to that. I'll give you the meaning and we'll discuss about it.
Klaibhyam māsmagamah pārtha nai tatvayupapadyate kshudram hridaya daurbalyam tyaktvottishta parantapa.
O Partha, yield not to unmanliness. This does not befit you, O scorcher of foes. Arise, giving up the petty weakness of the heart. Krishna tells Arjuna, don't behave like a klaibya, a person from the neutral gender. That's supposed to be probably something which is going to hurt Arjuna the most. He calls him klaibya. He says you're behaving like a eunuch. He's saying this is a behavior of an impotent person. It doesn't befit you. What a rebuke it is. He says you are a klaibya. Well, it's not that Krishna is speaking low of the neutral gender. It's not to be meant like that. You know, there are a class of people to be rebuked at, and using them as an example is a rebuke. But what Krishna is saying here is much, much more subtle than that. A woman has her own strengths. A man too has his own strengths. A woman has her own beauty. A man too has his own beauty. But it does not add beauty to a woman to act like a man, and a man to act like a woman. And that is when there is a confusion of gender, and that is what Krishna is referring to here. This is a moment for manliness. Arjuna, you're a kshatriya, you're a warrior, you're a man, but you're behaving like a woman now. You are crying like a woman. Crying is not bad. Crying like a woman is not a derogatory thing. But at this moment, this is not the behavior that you need to express. And that is why he says, klaibya. Krishna is telling Arjuna, this is the time for manliness. And he calls Arjuna parantapa, destroyer of the foes. Compassion itself is not wrong. Crying and breaking down like this itself is not wrong. But this is not the place for your compassion. This is a weakness of the heart. Hridaya daurbalyam, he says. What is bravery? If we look at it from that point of view, what is really bravery? A bully is not a brave person. A person who is bullying and troubling others, we don't call that person a brave person. No, Duryodhana was a bully. Ravana was a bully for that matter. But Hanuman, we always speak of a person who is brave, right? So what is that difference which makes a person a bully and what makes a person a brave? When one does what is supposed to be done, when one does what is right without hesitation, that is bravery, right? Arjuna is afraid to do his duty, and so Krishna is telling him, give up Hridaya Daurbalyam, the weakness of the heart that you are displaying now, right? He's not telling that you get up and you become a bully and go and finish all these people. You have to show bravery because this is the right thing to do. Trying to chicken out of the moment because you're scared to face it. You know, they say our bravery depends on who is in front of us. It doesn't depend on us. It depends on who is in front of us. If the person is a bigger bully than us, then we are scared, right? Krishna is saying that should not be the thing. Your bravery should always come, should stem from your righteousness. Are you right? Then you be brave. If you're wrong, you should be scared. As we saw in the first chapter, Duryodhana was scared. He says, you know, the two words, player words, which Vyasa used, paraya vishtam and aparaya I'm using the wrong words. My army seems to be sufficient, and he says that their army seems to be insufficient, right? But he uses a word which could mean insufficient and sufficient, right? Because as we said, Duryodhana was really scared. Duryodhana was worried. He knows that what he's doing is wrong, so he was scared. So Krishna is telling him that don't have Hridaya Daurbalyam, because what you're going to do is right. This is not a place where you can show cowardice, right? And there's another reason why Krishna tells Arjuna, don't be a Kleibya, don't be a eunuch. You know, during the time when they spend in the forest in exile, they're supposed to be in the forest for 12 years, and they're supposed to live for 1 year in what is called the Agnyadavasa, which means the clause which they agree upon when they go for the Vanavasa is, for 12 years they'll be in the forest, and for 1 year, they have to live incognito. Nobody should know that these are the Pandavas and this is Draupadi. And they should live one full year like that. And if at all they get caught in the process of that 1 year, they will have to again go to the forest for 12 years. And in fact, that is one of the reasons why the battle happens. But towards the end of that 1 year, the Kauravas realize and figure out where Pandavas are. They are living in the Virata kingdom, the Matsya kingdom of Virata king. But according to some of the calculations, it shows that actually the Agnyadavasa ends by then. But Duryodhana does not accept. He feels that we have caught them during the Agnyadavasa, and so they deserve to go back to the forest. And that's one of the points of contention where things go bad, and eventually it comes down to the point of the war. The point about the Agnyadavasa is, during that 1 year, it is Arjuna who actually takes on a name called Brihannala, and he lives the life of a eunuch in the Matsya kingdom. He teaches dance and music to the princes of the Matsya kingdom. Because as I said, he always had interest in fine arts. So he takes up this role of Brihannala, a eunuch. And again, there's another curse which leads him to live like that, where, as we know, he is the son of Lord Indra. And once when he goes to offer his obeisance to Lord Indra, there is this damsel in Indra's court, I think Urvashi, she falls for Arjuna, and she says that, you know, she would like to have a son through Arjuna. And Arjuna says, if you want a son, you take me. You're like my mother. I cannot look at you as my, lover or my wife. You take me as your son if you want a son like me. And she gets very, very irritated by that, because she is supposed to be a damsel, and no mortal can resist her beauty. And here is this great warrior who resists her beauty and who says that, you know, I cannot submit to your desires. So she gets very, very upset, and she curses Arjuna that you will become a Kleibya, you will become a eunuch. And Indra intercedes, and he says, no, it is no mistake of his. In fact, he has shown a behavior which is worthy of respect and worthy of appreciating. You should not have cursed him like that. So then Urvashi modifies the curse, and she says, okay, you will live as a Kleibya for 1 year. And then Indra blesses that this is not going to be a curse for you, this will be a blessing. So that's the beautiful inner meaning of that story. One might wonder that why should Arjuna be cursed? He was actually behaving very well. He's behaving very appropriately. Why should he be cursed? When you do the right thing, even a curse will become a blessing, and that's what happens in Arjuna's case. that 1 year Agnyadavasa, he is able to use that curse which was given to him. He becomes a eunuch, he becomes a Kleibya, and he gets through that 1 year, right? So Krishna is telling, your Brihannala days are over, Arjuna. Don't wake up now. This is not the time to be a Kleibya. The Brihannala episode is over. You've played that role. You've played it very well. You've played it wonderfully. But now is not the time to resurface Brihannala. You have to wake up now and you have to fight, right? So clearly Krishna is showing absolutely no sympathy to Arjuna. In no uncertain terms, he has expressed to Arjuna that he does not agree with the arguments that Arjuna has been giving. And hearing these words, Arjuna, and very, very vehemently he reacts. In fact, these four words which Swami, in the previous verse which we came across, Kashmalam, Akirtikaram, Aswargyam, and Anaryajushtam, right? These four adjectives which Krishna uses in the previous verse, to us it might look like, you know, these are very harsh words that Krishna is using against Arjuna, who seems to be displaying nothing but noble qualities and noble nature. These seems to be very hard, and it looks like Krishna is behaving very rudely, right, to Arjuna. You would expect Krishna to show some empathy and sympathy, and if not agree with Arjuna, at least explain a little more calmly and explain a little more patiently. But Krishna is flaring up in the very first verse. He's calling him all these words. He calls him Kleibya, he calls him Anarya, he calls him, your actions are Akirtikaram, Aswargyam. But Swami explains that, you know, that is the beauty. Only Swami can tell us what happens in Arjuna's mind. We can only think of what happens in my mind. I can put myself in Arjuna's place, and I can imagine if Swami were to come and use these words against me, I will get really, really angry, right? If you're trying to show your goodness to Swami and this is how Swami reacts, it's going to put you off. But only Swami can tell us what was the effect of these words, which appear otherwise very, very rude, in Arjuna's mind, right? And Swami explains that in Gita Vaini. He says, when these four words were spoken to Arjuna, they had a magical effect on Arjuna. Swami says, and I quote, the thick cloud of ignorance that had overwhelmed Arjuna started to melt a little. The tamas that had made him forget the truth was removed. Rajoguna returned and Arjuna found words to ask. He asked, how? That term, how, reveals much. It shows that the Gita expounds not merely on what has to be done, but even on how it has to be done. Unquote. This is a very, very beautiful insight that Swami is giving. Right? It appears, as I said, like very, very harsh words to be spoken to Arjuna. It appears that Arjuna is going to react vehemently, and that's what he's going to do too. But Swami is revealing the inner workings of Arjuna's mind. Arjuna recognizes that his thinking was wrong in some way, but he wants to know how he is wrong, right? That's what Arjuna is going to ask, and that's what Swami is saying here. Arjuna is asking, how? How am I wrong? And he's not only asking how is he wrong, but he's going to ask, what am I supposed to do? And he's going to ask, how am I supposed to do that? And one of the most important aspects of the Bhagavad Gita is not only what you have to do, but when you have to do, what you have to do, how you have to do. I know that sounded really, really confusing. It means it is not, your learning does not stop when you understand what has to be done at what time. What is more important is how you go about doing it, with what attitude you do that, with what perceptions you do that, with what bhavam you go on doing even the right actions, right? One level of doing actions is to discriminate what is right and wrong based on deshakala paristhiti, time, circumstance, and deshakala paristhiti, the time, place, and circumstance. Apart from that, you should also know with what attitude and with what bhavam and feeling those actions have to be performed. That is what Swami is saying here. The Bhagavad Gita does not only tell you what to do, but it also tells you how to do. Arjuna is not being told that you are wrong, and Krishna is not going to stop with that. Krishna is asking how. Tell me, how am I wrong? And Krishna is going to explain to Arjuna how his thinking is wrong. So both of these things are very, very important to us. why is Arjuna's thinking wrong, which seems to be so right, right? When we go through those verses, it seems to be so right and noble and perfect. Why is it wrong? How is it wrong? And Krishna is going to be asked by Arjuna, so tell me Krishna, what am I supposed to do? Krishna will tell him what is to be done, but Krishna will also tell him how it is to be done. And that is what is going to make this thing very, very important for us to look at. Probably we'll take one last verse, the fourth verse, and I'll quickly give you the meaning and explain that, and probably we'll conclude with that for today.
Arjuna uvacha katham bhishma maham sankhe dronancha madhusudana ishubhif pratiyotsyami pujarha varisudana.
Arjuna said, how, O Madhusudana? How shall I fight in the battle with arrows against Bhishma and Drona, who are fit to be worshipped, O destroyer of enemies? When you're talking about the Aryajushta, the opposite of Anaryajushta is Aryajushta, the ways of a cultured person. One of the most important aspects of a cultured person or cultured living is giving respect to elders, right? And Swami would be very, very particular about this. Swami would never tolerate a youngster, especially Swami's student, speaking very harshly or rudely to a teacher. Even if that elder is wrong, this is what Swami would say, that even if that person is wrong, you are not permitted to speak rudely or harshly to that person. Disrespectfully speaking to an elder in Swami's eyes is supposed to be a very, very bad thing to do, and you could be pulled up and you will face the consequences very bitterly, right? So when Krishna says that your actions are anaryajushtam, uncultured, Arjuna says it is wrong to disrespect elders like Bhishma and Drona, who are puja arhav, who are worthy of worship. Even in a verbal argument, it is wrong to talk disrespectfully to them. They are so worthy of worship. And you expect that I should fire arrows at them? Arjuna is asking Krishna, can't you see the point I'm making? Right? Because Arjuna is woken up. Till now he was actually sinking to his chair. He was becoming sad. He was becoming low. Right? That's what Swami was saying, that the clouds of tamas have parted and he actually springs into rajas. Swami would often say this, before you go to the state of sattva, you have to discard the state of tamas and you have to come into the state of rajas. Activity and passion, that is the first step before you step into the state of sattva. So till now Arjuna was sinking and he was saying, oh, I can't, my Gandiva is slipping and I'm going to slump into my chair. I don't feel like fighting. And he's literally crawling up in his seat. But suddenly he springs up when Krishna uses all of these harsh words. Arjuna is asking Krishna, can't you see my point? Can't you see the point I'm making, Krishna? This is not me being scared or suffering from cold feet. This is a very, very different scenario. That's what Arjuna is trying to tell Krishna. Why are you not able to appreciate what I am going through? And very, very smartly, Arjuna calls Krishna Madhusudana and Arisudana. What is so smart about calling him Madhusudana and Arisudana? Madhusudana, as we saw in an earlier verse, it means one who killed the demon Madhu. And Arisudana means one who vanquishes one's enemies. So Arjuna is hinting, see, you also killed demons and enemies only. You are Madhusudana and Arisudana. But who are these people in front of me? They are elders, gurus, my family, my friends. He says, these are not demons and enemies, right? These are my friends, these are my family, this is my guru. They are the people who are responsible for what I am today. And that's why he smartly throws in these names of Krishna. He says, you are Madhusudana, you are Arisudana. Don't you understand? What is making me hesitate is not because I'm scared. It is because these people are my own people, worthy of respect and worship. Puja arhav, they are worthy of being worshipped. They are in front of me. But Arjuna has probably forgotten that Krishna, who is standing in front of him, is one who punished his own uncle Kamsa and his own cousin Sishupala when they did the wrong things. Right? Maybe one way it is to set an example to Arjuna in the battlefield. At this point in Kurukshetra, Krishna displayed his adherence to dharma. in this manner by even punishing those, just like how, Arjuna said, he said, Matulan, my uncles are there, my maternal uncles are there. And Krishna would say, even I have killed my maternal uncle because he has done something wrong. And so nobody is worthy of giving this advice to Arjuna than Krishna. Krishna has made himself even in that avatar more worthy of giving that advice to Arjuna, and that is the beauty. So Arjuna, the poor fellow, is completely trapped. There is no way he's going to escape from this. But we will have to wait till next week when we continue this conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. Of course, this is Swami speaking to all of us. And as we go through the second chapter more and more, some of the most profound Vedantic truths are going to be spoken of, especially in this second chapter. It's a very, very important chapter. The Jnana Yoga is expounded, Sankhya Yoga is expounded in this chapter. But we'll come to that. Thank you all for joining me. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. I'll meet you all again next week. But for now, in a short while, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of today, the Vahini Satsang. I'll meet you all next week, 7:30 p.m. for the next episode of the Gita series, A Try on Pilgrimage.